Voices of the Elephant is proudly sponsored by SiteGround.com, a leader in website hosting and a terrific partner for all your website projects. Their top-notch technologies will make your websites fast and secure. Welcome to the Voices of the Elephant podcast. Each episode of Voices of the Elephant brings you an interview with a member of the PHP community. From project leaders to user group organizers, we talk to the people that are helping make the PHP community special. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Voices of the Elephant. My name is Cal Evans. I'm your host, and my special guest is Mr. Derek Binkley. Say hi to everybody, Derek.
Hi, everybody.
Now, you're going to be with us on DayCamp for Developers Data, which is coming up on May 31st. And we're going to talk a little bit about your talk and what you're going to be talking about at DayCamp. But before we get into this, you're a first-timer here on Voices of the Elephant. So I'm going to ask you the same question I ask every first-timer. Give us your hero backstory. How did you get into programming and how did that lead to PHP?
Okay, well, I kind of just stumbled into it. As a child, I always really enjoyed technology. I spent a lot of hours on the Atari 2600, mastering Pitfall and other such classic games as that. And so I always just enjoyed technology. But it wasn't until I got my first job straight out of college that I started programming, and that's just how I ended up with it. I had been a math major in college and had taken a couple of computer science classes, so I had a little bit of the background, but wasn't sure what I wanted to do when I graduated. And since I graduated in the late 90s, there was this big looming problem called Y2K.
I remember that.
Yes. Yes. And so I was hired and trained in COBOL, which even in the late 90s was not the most modern of technologies. But there's a lot of COBOL code out there that needed to be fixed. So that's how I got started. And the funniest thing is that after I finished the training, it was so close to Y2K that the problem had already really been solved. So I didn't actually do a single bit of coding to help stave off that problem. However, it gave me a great introduction to programming and databases, and I got all this free training because the company, all they could do was train me for 9 months until Y2K was fixed and I moved on to the next thing. And throughout my career, I've just kind of just jumped from one thing to the next and just learned whatever's available. And that's actually how I got into PHP, is that I was spending time working on a company website, and we wanted to know what could we get done with our current hosting provider. And there wasn't a whole lot available in the early 2000s, except for PHP. And I didn't know anything about it except it was what ran on our web host. And so I started learning it, and I just enjoyed it. So I kept doing more projects in it, and I got to a position where I could have a lot of say in the technologies that our company used. So I was able to really push a lot of our customer facing code out to PHP. And it just was a great way to get learning and get new people on board quickly and help them learn a new language too. So,
now I see your cat wandering around. What's your cat's name?
Yes, this is one of my two cats. It's Halloween.
For those of you, since the video is not produced or not released on this, I'm watching as Derek's talking and the cats, I see an ear appear or I see the back go by. So, hello, Halloween. Good to meet you. Okay. So now, what's your favorite part about the program, about being a professional programmer?
I like that we're always learning something new. You know, sometimes it's a little overwhelming, but, but I think it's actually, it's a great thing for me. And it's, I like teaching and I like learning, which is why I've started doing things like Day Camp for Developers, and speaking at conferences, is because I like the learning aspect and I like helping others learn. So that's, you know, the great thing for me about being a developer is just, you're not going to get bored. And that's just that. Yeah. I just love that.
This is true. If you don't enjoy learning, programming is the wrong profession to be in, because you're constantly having to learn new things. I used to have a coworker of mine that used to say that, you know, if you've not learned anything in the past 6 months, you're pretty much a paperweight. So
right,
everything changes so fast. Now it's time for you to be a game changer with the RingCentral Developers Game Changer Program. Grow your skills, help others in the community, and get rewarded with awesome prizes like RingCentral swag, conference tickets, software, iPads, computers, and so much more. Don't just be a developer, be a game changer and join the program today. For more information, visit developers.ringcentral.com. Hey, yeah. I mentioned earlier that you're going to be with us on Day Camp for Developers Data, and you're going to be talking about searching data. And this is something I had to deal with last year, but you're going to be talking about Elasticsearch and PHP. Let's start by, give us a little bit of an overview of what your talk will be about.
Okay. Well, like you said, I'm going to be talking about Elasticsearch, and but it goes beyond that to just talking about searching data and getting relevant results and exploring data and doing it in ways that you can't do with a normal relational database. And that's where Elasticsearch comes in.
Oh,
and and I will talk about how Elasticsearch differs from a relational database and what the extra pieces give you. And the nice thing about this talk is that even if you never want to use Elasticsearch, a lot of the concepts are used with other products like Apache Solr, because both of those use the what's called the Lucene index, which is a Java-based way of indexing text. So a lot of what I'll be talking about is relevant even if you never want to use Elasticsearch.
That is very cool. Now, like I said, I did a little work with Elasticsearch last year. The thing that struck me was there are so many different types of queries. And I don't mean, you know, SQL and joins and stuff like that. Although, from what I understand, they're talking about adding an SQL type language to the queries. But there's so many different types of the queries available. And when I did it, I just used the most basic query string. But can you tell us, do you use any of the advanced query types, or do you just stick with the basics?
I start with the basics and then I build upon that. Mm-hmm. So in my talk, we're gonna talk about, you know, just how you do basic searching and how you get to be fast. But there's also, there's also filtering, and we're gonna talk about geo searching. Which is a really nice different way of searching, but it's also available in Elasticsearch. Yeah. And when you combine that with text searching, you can come up with some really cool applications for, what documents have these keywords or this key phrase in it and are located within 5 miles of a point. And combining that together, you can kind of start to think about all the different types of applications that you could create and with that. So
I used to do that a long time ago in FoxPro, and we'd use zip codes, and we had the zip code geotag database that you could join into your search. But the problem was it was incredibly slow. And when I started looking at Elasticsearch, that was one of the things that really excited me. I didn't get to implement that feature, but that was on my list of things I wanted to add, was to be able to very quickly pull out things, not only just customers by customers within a certain area, but do things like pinpoint maps of where your customers are, or pinpoint maps of where your tickets are coming from, and you know, things like that. Just help users visualize the data that you have in new ways that might help them.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And that's just one of the things I found with Elasticsearch, which is, even if you aren't using the geo-searching, it's just being able to represent data in different ways for your users, and to help them explore that data, whether it's, you know, on a real actual map, or if it's just, you know, finding a document and then looking for things that are also relevant in other ways based on that same, you know, text query, or based on, you know, a document that you found, and then saying, okay, using that as a starting point, let's move on and, use that as my new search. And Elasticsearch chat just does that. And like you said, it's incredibly fast.
Oh.
You know, we're going to see in my talk, you know, searching over 1 million records, you know, and it's going to be less than 100 milliseconds.
Wow.
You know, so it's just, and this is, you know, all just running on a tiny little virtual machine on my dev box, not a big server farm or anything. So that's just what really makes it accessible to all of our users.
One of the things I found and was incredibly surprised about this was Elasticsearch will let you just dump data in. You can just say, here, take this and index it. But if you take the time to build a map, not a geographic map, but a data map, and tell Elasticsearch, these are the pieces of data I'm storing and this is what they are, it speeds it up, I mean, almost tenfold when it knows what the data is. The system I was working on originally was just taking everything in an SQL record, concatenating it together, and dumping it in as one big string. And when I broke that out into individual fields and told Elasticsearch, you know, this is what this field represents, everything from a string to an IP address or whatever, it, you know, it recognizes a bunch of different data types, that sped it up so much.
Yeah, it really does. And that's one of the key things that I talk about in the talk is understanding the differences between those data types, mm-hmm. and when to use them, because you don't want Elasticsearch to create a bunch of tokens and create this expensive index if your column is, say, just a list of U.S. states. Yeah. That's a pretty finite a list there, and you can define that differently so that you can use that more as a filter. Say, you know, bring me all the records in Wisconsin, and then start searching from there. So yeah, that is incredibly important, and I do talk about that a lot.
I'm looking forward to this talk. When I was working with Elasticsearch, I barely scratched the surface because I was rewriting an existing system, so I didn't have the time to dive deep. I had to get the existing one replaced, and it was always on my roadmap to go back and to redo parts of it because I knew I could make it even faster. But even so, the users, once we implemented the new system, the users kept telling me, oh my God, this is so much faster than the last version. So,
oh hey, yeah.
Let's talk about, I always like to talk about people's hobbies because, you know, we're more than just our code, and I like to try to present a well-rounded person. And when I asked you what your hobbies were, you had something that, you know, honestly, I giggled a little bit, but on the other hand, for a developer, this is not a bad hobby. You enjoy making pizza. And since, you know, most code is written off of coffee, pizza, and M&Ms, that's a pretty powerful hobby. Talk to us a little bit about why making pizzas is one of your favorite things to do.
Well, for one, it's delicious.
Well, there's that.
Yeah, but it's also really easy to order by picking up the phone or using an app. So why do I go to the trouble of making it myself? Well, I just I like tinkering and experimenting with different crusts, and so it's a tradition in our family now that Saturday is pizza night. And so Saturday morning, you know, we get up and make the dough. And now that my kids are a little bit older, they're not, only one of them's you know, actually up at an early hour, but he gets me up and you know, I start the dough rising so that it has all day to get ready. And that's kind of the easy part, just, you know, getting a dough ready. And then the cooking of it is where I have been tinkering a lot. And it kind of depends on, since I'm in Wisconsin, we have a long time where we want to be inside when it's really cold out. And we don't mind turning our oven up to 500 degrees for a long period of time. So I actually have a technique for my winter pizza making where I take the I take a pizza steel. It actually gets hotter than a pizza stone. Hmm. I had my brother-in-law who owns a machine shop made it for me, and it's extremely heavy piece of metal that I put at the bottom of the oven, and then I, you know, crank the oven up to 500 degrees, and then I turn the broiler on so that I get, you know, just a lot of heat right on that metal. Mm-hmm. And then I get a pizza crust and I put it on there, and it just bakes so fast.
Now, so, do you put the pizza on the pizza steel like you would a pizza stone, or is it like on the rack above or something like that where the steel is just heating from the bottom?
Yeah, no, I put it directly on the steel.
Oh, very cool.
So, yeah, you know, since I don't have a wood or coal fire oven like they would in Naples or something like that, I you know, can't get it up to, you know, 1500 degrees, but this is as close as I can get during inside in a normal oven, but it makes a really, really good crisp crust.
You said you experiment with crusts and everything. What's your favorite crust experiment that you've done?
You know, that over the last summer, I actually started experimenting with doing it on a charcoal grill and a gas grill. So I actually had some different ways of cooking the crust outside. In those few months in Wisconsin where we actually want to be outside. So I've experimented with, you know, do I put it on a pan on the grill, or do I, one of the things that I really liked was putting the crust on the, just the crust itself without any toppings, put it on the grill, take it off, flip it over, then you put the toppings on, then you put it back on.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's a and you have to be very careful on a grill not to have, you know, fire torching your crust right away.
Yeah.
So you know, I've been experimenting with those cooking methods, and that's had some really interesting and delicious results.
Excellent. Hey, real quick before we shut down, I got to ask you, since we're talking pizza, pineapple, is pineapple a real topping or no?
You know, I think it is, but my kids don't think so. So in my house, it's not.
Yeah. Well, then we can still remain friends. Good. Hey, I want to thank you, Derek, for being with us here today on Voices of the Elephant. It's been good getting to know you. I can't wait for your talk at Day Camp for Developers on May 31st. And audience, I want to thank you for being a part of another episode of Voices of the Elephant. We hope you have found it a good investment of your time. And we hope to see you right here next week on Voices of the Elephant. Thanks for listening to Voices of the Elephant. Voices of the Elephant is copyright EICC Incorporated and released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivatives, Share and Share Alike license. To nominate someone to be a guest on Voices of the Elephant, visit our website and click on the nominate link. The URL is voicesoftheelephant.com. Elephant is, of course, spelled ELEPHPANT.